Josephine County and saying no to genetically modified organizations in his part of the world. Just a few headlines before we get rolling with our guest. 60 years of secrets and lies at Hanford. There haven't been enough to silence people. The contaminated sites, whistleblowers. There's a history of whistleblowers, people who have said there's something wrong right from the get-go. 60 years, 1943, they started building the thing. It used to be what we know now as the Defense Department. It used to have a far more honest name, the War Department. When they first broke ground, General Leslie Groves, who oversaw the massive project as it was lifting off, said this. This is his quote from the guy that was in charge of building Hanford. He said, "Chances would have to be taken that in more normal times would be considered reckless to the extreme." Reckless to the extreme. That's how Hanford was built. And it seems that things haven't changed much since 1943. The Navy is investigating alleged cheating on tests by senior enlisted sailors training on, wait for it, naval nuclear reactors. Oh, great! The guys in charge of the reactors are cheating on the test. In a near twist or widening tale of ethical lapses in the military, the Navy's investigating these charges against about one-fifth of its trainers at the School for Naval Nuclear Power Reactor Operators. And several million American workers will cut back their hours on the job or leave the nation's workforce entirely because of President Barack Obama's health care overhaul. Or could it be that people having the freedom to retire earlier spend more time as stay-at-home parents or because they no longer have to cling to a job that they've hated for years and years, for decades, hated it. They cling to it because what? Because they need the health insurance and there's no other way to get it. If you'd switch jobs, you could move to a lovelier place or more opportunities for your children. If you have a child with asthma and you have an opportunity to get out of the area that's causing it, oh no, you have to hang on because that's your only chance of having proper medical care. So it seems far more likely that that's the reason. And we haven't heard much on this score for a while now, but we will be having her back soon. Shama Sawant, a socialist city council member, testified before a Washington State House panel yesterday in support of raising the state's minimum wage statewide, not just in the CTAC. And the House Committee on Labor and Workforce Development took public testimony on House Bill 2672, in fact, that is the bill that would raise the minimum wage to $12 an hour over the next 3 years. That's what Shama Sawant had been lobbying for all along, although she wanted to go higher and faster. $15 right now seems like the best way to catch up on years and years of basically robbing workers of their rightful pay. Someone argues that while every step towards increasing the minimum wage is critical and will strengthen the city of Seattle's proposal to raise the minimum to $15 an hour, she said that raising the statewide minimum wage to $12 will not be enough. See, this woman is definitely, her reach is way beyond the city council. And Republicans in Congress yesterday called for an overhaul to the Endangered Species Act to curtail what they see as environmentalist lawsuits and give more power to states. But experts say broad changes to one of the nation's cornerstone environmental laws are unlikely given the pervasive partisan divide in Washington, D.C. That's cynical as hell, isn't it? People are going to do, there are a few ethical people, there are a few environmentalists, there are activists among us who are going to say no, we're going to continue to protect these species. Because you know what? If one goes down, we all go down. It's not as though the planet is host to many disparate, different species. The fact is that the planet is a single organism. And Democrats in Congress have introduced legislation that would restore net neutrality rules. In Vermont, a transpartisan group of state representatives called for legislation that would block some of the practical effects of mass data collection by the NSA. That's it for the headlines. We're going to speak now with Dan Bowden. He is in down there in Josephine County. And let's see. Dan, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, GMOs, there's a huge push on right now. It's impossible to not to see that it seems that Monsanto and Syngenta and the ilk are pushing hard to destroy protections. Can you talk about Josephine County and the specific problems that you have down there and stopping this?
So Josephine County is actually one of the lower ranked counties in the state for agricultural production. We only about 13% of our land is actually arable land or land that is deemed appropriate for agricultural purposes. The reason is because most of our land is steep mountainous terrain. So in this geographical location that is not largely predisposed towards agriculture in the traditional sense, what we have is a very strong culture of small boutique farms, most of which are organic. Most would be considered non-certified organic, so they're using organic methods, but they are not trying to get organic certification, or it's also what we like to call beyond organic farms. So we are really typified by these small boutique farms that put out high quality produce, but not only produce, our valley is also a seed vault for the world. So there are certain types of seed that are grown here in a way that because of the isolation of our valley from other major agricultural areas, we can grow seeds here and maintain genetic integrity of those seeds. And then these seeds are actually sold throughout the world. So our valley, similar to the Willamette Valley being known as a seed vault for certain crops, we are actually a seed vault for various crops. One of those crops would be chards and beets. We do have a checkerboarding of genetically modified sugar beet crops that are scattered certainly in our neighboring county, which is Jackson County. They have a lot more agriculture there. But we also know of beet fields, not as many, but we know of beet fields that are scattered throughout our county as well. So those genetically modified beet fields, if any of those beets are allowed to go to bloom, their pollen is a very, very light pollen, and it can travel for miles on the wind. So then we have no more assurance that we can have genetic integrity in the seeds that we provide to the rest of the world if we have genetically modified pollen blowing on the wind.
Hang on, Dan. This is critical for all of us. This is critical, of course, for the, you know, the almighty bottom line, but, of course, the integrity of the seed bank is of greater value than anything else, perhaps, you know, on the planet. Can you let listeners know before we let you go? We're out of time now, but I'd love to have you back on the show again in the very near future to talk about some of the implications of the, you know, if these things get loose. Can you let listeners know where to find more about this and follow what's taking place there?
Yes, please go to www.gmofreejosephinecounty.org. And that's a long name, but type in the whole thing, and it is .org. And we have a lot of information there. You can get information on our local petition to ban genetically modified crops and other things that we are also participating in.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, the state of Cascadia is all one, and it's our responsibility to stand with people like Dan. We're going to speak now with another farmer of a very different sort of farm, different but, again, similar problem. Steve Charter, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Steve, we spoke yesterday. You were a cattle rancher north of Billings, Montana, and basically under a siege by the coal mining companies who think that they own the land under your land. Can you talk a little bit about your campaign and other ranchers? These are huge areas and few people, so it's not like an enormous crowd can show up and protest these things.
Yeah, that's right. We're kind of few and far between out here, but that doesn't keep us from getting our voice heard. And we've been our ranch is underlain by coal.
But what's this report of the BLM? Coal. It turns out there's a report that identifies a number of problems with the federal coal leasing program.
Right. The General Accounting Office recently came out, and that's a branch of Congress that investigates various things. They came out with a report saying that basically the coal leasing program that's run by the Bureau of Land Management is basically been mismanaged. They've undervalued the coal, and they also don't... Their attitude is one of more serving the coal industry than serving the public, and it's the public's coal. And we've been tracking these undervaluations of coal and for a long time, and finally it's getting a lot of national attention. So what we want to happen is for the coal leasing program to kind of pause and fix this broken system. The public's losing a lot of money from what they could be getting from coal, but
not to mention the value of the land itself once the mining companies roll
really,
through.
That's really what's more important. And generally with coal, if all the externalized costs were put onto coal, and this is one instance where the coal industry basically gets a big subsidy.
Sure. Yeah.
But if all the externalized costs with the health costs, it starts like where we are, where the coal is mined, and, it harms the aquifers. The reclaimed land is never as good as it was before.
And this is what we never hear. Steve, we're flat out of time. I would love to have you back on the show again. There's a great deal to talk about, a great deal of interest here, certainly, in coal mining terminals and so forth. But we are out of time right now. Could you give us briefly the website to go to talk about this more?
www.northernplains.com. .org, and that would be
it.
A good source of information.
That's where I found all of this. Thank you so much for that. This has been Air Cascadia before Wednesday, February 5th, 2014. Tammy Dean engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Disease be passed on by intercourse. We'll continue our multi-part series on the growing Lyme epidemic and the fight by its victims to get the diagnosis and treatment they need. We'll be joined by an MD and a researcher who were part of a major study. We'll also speak to the filmmaker of Under Our Skin, a real-life thriller about the nature and the battle against Lyme disease. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we continue our multi-part series on Lyme disease. We started out this series on Lyme disease by talking about the parallels between the AIDS epidemic and the Lyme epidemic. Some new research shows that Lyme disease may be even more similar to AIDS than previously thought because it may be sexually transmitted. We're going to be talking to Dr. Raphael Stricker and Ms. Marianne Milven. Both of them are researchers who were part of an international team of scientists who conducted this study. Dr. Stricker is a well-known physician with a focus on Lyme disease. He practices in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Ms. Milven is a microbiologist from Canada who has been studying Lyme and Morgellons disease. And again, I thank you both for joining us on Flashpoints. Very important subject, and we're really having our eyes open, so welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
Okay. Well, you know, Dr. Stricker, on the past shows, a couple of shows, we've heard how Lyme bacteria closely resemble syphilis, and we know that syphilis is sexually transmitted disease, so it seems like an obvious question to ask if Lyme disease is also sexually transmitted. Has this question been investigated by other researchers? How many studies have been done? Is this an open area?
Absolutely. It's a very likely possibility, and it has been suggested in the past by a number of different groups that Lyme disease could be sexually transmitted because it is a kind of bacteria called a spirochete that resembles the cause of syphilis. And in fact, the late William Harvey over a decade ago suggested that Lyme disease could be sexually transmitted because of the pattern of distribution of the disease. And since that time, we've had some animal model studies showing or suggesting sexual transmission, and now we have this new data that apparently confirms that.
All right. Now, talk a little bit more about this study, Ms. Milven. What did you find?
Well, we wanted to see if we could find living motile spirochetes in vaginal and seminal secretions, and if we could find viable organisms in those body fluids, then it would suggest that they would be able to be transmissible. So we took vaginal and seminal secretions and we cultured them, as you would do for Borrelia burgdorferi,